Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's a common misconception that therapists have their shit together and all our relationships are perfect.
Which is total bullshit.
I'm Vanessa Bennett, licensed therapist.
I'm John Kim, licensed therapist.
And this is our story.
So first I wanted to say congratulations. Vanessa got her first offer to be a sugar baby. Is it sugar baby? What is it?
Yeah, sugar baby.
So, and also he mentioned that it doesn't have to be sexual. For $500 a month, you can.
No, $500 a week.
Oh, a week. I'm sorry. That's was that insulting?
$500 a week is kind of insulting, but $500 a month is really insulting.
That must feel good. I mean, I gotta say, if someone said, "John, I'll give you $500 a week. There's no sex involved. Just give me some connection, some conversations." That's a compliment. I mean, and it has nothing to do with therapy. Now, if it had to do with therapy, that's actually not really a compliment.
Yeah. But I mean, what do you do as a sugar baby, as far as giving someone attention that I don't do differently when I'm giving somebody undivided attention as a therapist? I mean, I'm going to just be analyzing this guy the whole time, obviously.
He probably wants some dirty talk. He probably wants,
he's coming to the wrong person then.
Yeah. And I could attest for that.
Barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah. Let me message him and say, listen, man, Vanessa's love language is not words of affirmation. So if you want some dirty talk, you are, you're going to want a refund.
Oh man.
But if sex was in the picture, then of course I think that $500 a week is cheap, because you're definitely your other love language is touch.
Yeah, I like how you stumbled through that a little bit.
I stumble through life, baby. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we got into a giant fight today. Not today, this week.
Oh, it took me a second. I was like, we did? Oh yeah.
And you know what's interesting about this fight was it was very high. It was high, not wide. So what I mean by that was I felt like it was explosive, but it didn't last long. My revelation after was exactly that. Like there was really, for me, there was no residue. It was like almost like we had a fight. It was kind of explosive. And then I totally it didn't bother me at all the next day. It was gone.
That's interesting, because I don't think that I had the word residue makes me feel like there was more to talk about. And I didn't feel like there was more to talk about, but there was something that stuck with me that I still wasn't not totally able to put my finger on.
I'm usually the person that wants to talk things to death. I'm the person that after the fight, for the next 3 days, we're going to dissect it, talk about it. It still bothers me. But for some reason with this one, and I think it's a good sign. To me, I'm seeing it as a sign of my growth, that I was able to let it go, like naturally let it go, not white knuckle it.
Do you think it was partly because I said, in so many words, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I said something like,
"You're going to leave me?
I don't want to talk about this anymore." Like, I'm basically flooded and I am not thinking logically and I can't, I have nothing else to give to this conversation.
No, that to me, that's more gasoline in the flame, the fire.
See, that is so unfair. I think as the avoidant, I think that's so unfair because I think that that's like the opposite of what I teach clients. It's like, you have to respect when somebody is flooded, especially the avoidant. And if the avoidant says to you, like, okay, I'm tapping out, like I can't do anymore in this moment. To keep adding gasoline is just, it's gasoline, right?
It's totally unfair. And I think the whole point of this is that, both you and I are not perfect, you know, mm-hmm. It is something that I am working on. Before, if I got into a fight and they didn't want to, not they, if she didn't want to talk about it, I would keep pressing. I would see it as her trying to, you know, exit through the back door or being avoidant or not dealing with the issue or sweeping something under the rug. But now today, of course, I realize everyone's built differently and people need space and you have to respect that. So in my 20s and half of my 30s, I definitely, I didn't have the tools to give that to people. Today, I feel like I have more tools to do that. But of course, you know, we snap back often.
That's so interesting because in the moment it felt like you actually respected that and it didn't feel like gasoline. It felt like you actually were like, okay, you took it, you heard it and you left it.
Oh yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Cause we only see things through our own lens. I felt, you know, very heated and I wasn't doing that, but maybe I was because that's something I wanted to change about myself. Okay. Anyway. And I don't know how much we need to talk about what we fought about, but, I know that if I was listening, I would feel a little cheated if we say we had a fight and then we don't even, you know, talk about what it was.
Yeah. I mean, I,
but I also don't want to bore people. So let's do it very Cliff Notes style. And, that's something from probably the 80s and 90s. So if you're young, you don't know what I'm talking about. Cliff Notes are bullet points. Cliff Notes the reason I graduated high school, because I don't read, I would get the Cliff Notes and do the book report based on the Cliff Notes.
Man, I can only imagine for somebody like you who only does audiobooks before audiobooks. Well, I mean, I guess there was book on tape, but before audiobooks, what did you do?
I am actually embarrassed to say this. Well, maybe I'm not that embarrassed because I say it often, but I like actual books I've read where I'm flipping through pages, less than I could count on both hands.
You mean like start to finish?
Oh, never finish. But like, you know, Super Fudge and self-betterment books, start, never finish. But that being said, in my Audibles, I've got probably 100 books and I've listened to all. So I'm a listener. I listen to them and you're the opposite. You like reading.
Yeah. I mean, that just takes into such account, like, everybody has such different learning styles and it actually bothers me because I think, it's the whole diatribe, but like we put so much emphasis on people having one, like our school system, like one specific way of learning. And if you can't learn this way, then there's something wrong with you. And it's like, it's so much of what's broken in our system. Yeah. Because you're not abnormal. Like you are one third of the population that makes things through audio.
Yeah. And it maybe have something to do with ADHD. I don't know.
Yeah. But it's so common anyway.
So we were watching a Hillary Clinton documentary and everything was fine. And then how did it start? Then you said, I could tell, because Hillary Clinton is controversial. And even though on paper, has done amazing things and she's got an amazing story and she's accomplished so much, there's something about her that people don't like. It seems like with Hillary Clinton, you either love her or you hate her. And so that's interesting to me. I don't know a lot about her, but watching her documentary, I said something like, oh, I think I know what it is. It's that she doesn't come off warm. Like she doesn't show herself. She's not vulnerable. She's more information driven than showing herself. Like she doesn't have that kind of, I don't know if it's charisma or that vulnerability, you know. And then you said,
I don't remember. I said something like, I don't remember, something like, yes, and it was a yes. And
yeah. And there was other stuff of, something that's baked in because we judge her.
Well, it was really, you know what it was? It's this, I don't remember exactly what I said, but essentially it's this feeling of like, I think what was triggered for me in that moment was this, this thing that I've heard my whole life and that I know every woman has heard their whole life, like just smile. Right. And not that you said that, but that was what was triggered in me. Like, well, if she just smiled, you know, and, right. And that was, I think, what set me off.
Yeah. And so of course that's going to set you off because then if that's what you hear me saying, even though I didn't say those words, then it's basically me saying she's not likable because she's a woman, you know? And then for me, by you saying yes, and you can't separate this whole part, which is, you know,
misogyny,
women being oppressed, like all the deeper stuff. And of course I agree with that, you know, with, it being baked in society, all of that. Right. And also her being, close to being the first female president. And I believe she didn't, win because she is a female. Right. So I get all that, but my point was you attaching that and not giving me just my opinion, but it came with this attachment, right? It came with this caboose. It made me feel like you're forcing me to take my medicine. And so that's when we started arguing because I said, okay, I get all that, but that's not what I mean. All I'm talking about is her energy as a being. So I'm not talking about gender. I'm just talking about, you know, I could see why some people are kind of turned off by her because I believe most of us don't vote by what's on paper. We vote by emotion, by kind of like the feeling we get from a person. And you said, yes. And then you said, but you can't subtract all these things. And that's when we got into this huge tug of war.
Yeah. We haven't resolved. I mean, there's no resolve. I still think there's a yes and. So I think the important thing, if you're listening to take away from this, is that sometimes arguments can just be arguments. They don't have to have a neat bow.
Well, what was frustrating for me about this was I wasn't disagreeing with her. I just wanted, like, that was a separate conversation. I wanted this to be its own single serving. And if you want to talk about things that are baked in because you're a woman in society and all that, yeah, sure. But that's a different conversation. Why can't I just have this one comment, which is, she's not vulnerable. And that's probably why people don't like her.
Yeah.
And so that's why, and you know, of course we would both have horn signs. And so we wouldn't let go of the rope. But here's what's interesting about this. So because it's always about what's happening underneath, right? It's not about what we're talking about. It's always about something that is happening underneath that is triggering anger, frustration, you know, whatever, right? And so for Vanessa, it may be that because I was holding on to this so tightly, in her view, it may be me, another man, not taking away your voice, you know, or trying to twist you or force you or whatever, me not backing down, me not giving you a safe space. And then for me, it was like I couldn't have my own. I felt like I was kind of like treated as a kid almost, like I couldn't have my own opinion that was just left at that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for us, there's a little bit of a story attached to that. Like I have my story, you have your story. And
sure,
I think your story a lot of times shows up as feeling like the kid. So, or a kid or whatever. Yeah. And so that is a trigger for you. Whether that is the intention behind whatever is said in the moment by, you know, myself, that's a sore spot for you.
Yes. And this is going to be a great segue into the second half of this conversation, this episode. So I grew up the youngest. I grew up sheltered. My brother was an umbrella. He had to grow up fast. He had to go to work. he had to be very responsible. So like at 14, my brother was, you know, paying bills, reading the mail, all of that, because my parents, you know, didn't speak English well and all that. I got to go outside and play, right? Vanessa has the complete opposite story, where she had to grow up very fast. So she's basically my brother, right? So when she was a teenager, she was already, she had a sibling, she was changing diapers, she was, right, doing all that, growing up very fast. And so we're opposites. And so for me, because I was, quote unquote, a kid and enabled, I've had a lot of people tell me what to do. So I think I track that, you know, because I am very, I don't want to say, because I'm, my energy is that of kind of like a curious child who colors outside the lines and doesn't think things through and sometimes isn't responsible, right? That's me. So because of that, I think I tend to attract, whether it's a partner or just friends, people who see that and kind of see it as adorable and kind of subconsciously want to take care of me or want to be my parent. So I've had best friends who came off as very possessive. And I don't even think they knew it. You know, this is just a dynamic. It's an energy. It's the stuff that's happening underneath. My mom nags a lot, and my mom will never see me as a adult. She, you know, put on your seatbelt. Did you drink water? Like, she's basically old school Korean nagging. And I get it. It all comes from a good place. But so I get it from my mom. I get it from my brother. I don't think my brother will ever see me as like an adult. He's always going to see me as his younger brother who, you know, forgets things and isn't responsible. So I get a lot of, when I engage with him, I get a lot of, well, you should do this, you should do that. And then of course my dad, who's no longer with us, but he used to always say, this is what you, so I always had people around me telling me what to do. And so, that's my own story. And so I'm very sensitive to that. So when Vanessa does anything where I feel like she's treating me like, that I'm her son instead of partner, I'm very sensitive to that. Her, you on the other hand, you're used to that because you've been a parent your entire life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you said it earlier, like you're unconsciously attracted to, I think, the parenting type. And for better or worse, I'm unconsciously attracted to
taking care of someone.
Right. And so it's frustrating, but also, like, we both play a role in that, right? Like, for whatever reason, that is what we're both drawn to.
Yes, but here's the thing. We are unconsciously attracted to things, but if we are also people who are working on ourselves and growing and all of that, we also stop it. We also are aware of it and, you know, are sensitive to it and also don't want that. Do you know what I'm saying?
I think we're sensitive to it. I don't think we stop it. I think that's a bold statement. I don't know that stuff ever gets stopped. I think maybe you can stop a couple of times in the moment or like soften it.
I think you should use I statements.
No, I'm saying everybody.
Oh, you're not talking about me.
Like,
you.
We don't stop things. Like, that's not the way self-betterment works. It's like you become more aware of it. And like, maybe next time it's not, you know, it doesn't take over in the moment. Maybe you are able to stop it once or twice, but it's not like you wave a wand, it's gone just because you do the work.
Well, yeah. I mean, the energy may not be gone, but you do stop things. I mean, there's people who, you know, use drugs and they stop using drugs, or people who,
but they will struggle with addictive personalities and compulsiveness their entire life. That doesn't stop just because they stop taking alcohol and drugs.
Yeah. So we could turn the volume down. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So what I think has happened, at least for me, is that probably would have felt good when I wasn't healthy. So before I, you know, went through my self-betterment journey, when I was, you know, attracted to dysfunction, that actually, I think, felt good. So someone telling me what to do, mothering me, that probably felt safe. That's all I knew. Now that I'm kind of on the other side, and I'm 47, now it does the opposite effect. It makes me feel.
Do you think it felt good, or do you think you just didn't have the tools or the language to verbalize it in another way? Like, because as I'm sitting here thinking, like, oh, did that feel good? I know for a fact that I've always felt resentful of having to take care of somebody who I know should be my equal partner.
Yeah, but you also said
before I wouldn't say anything and I would just push it down and hold on to the resentment.
Yeah, but you also said being struggling with codependency, you need that. You need to take care of someone.
Yeah.
That made you feel good.
Part of me needs to be needed. Yeah, right. So I guess what's the line?
If you were in your early 20s, if you were at the peak of being codependent or whatever you're struggling with, and you met someone who didn't need you, there might be less of an attraction there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. And so for me, in my 20s and when I was, I had a very distorted definition of love, and I maneuvered in relationships, just basically how I felt, not without ever thinking or being aware. Like the whole idea of being a walking reaction. At that time, when someone took care of me or told me what to do or to, I have a joke with my friend who is also Asian and divorced and a therapist. And when I first met him, we had this joke that we had to ask our wives to eat sugar cereal because we were such children. And it's so specific that we were like on the floor laughing because it was so specific, right? And when I was married, you know, I had a sweet tooth and, I have a lot less of a sweet tooth than I did before. This is what I'm talking about. Hi, Mom. Mom's coming out. Nice to meet you. So I used to eat a lot of because I grew up with, you know, all the horrible things like Snickers and McDonald's and junk food. When I was married, when we would go to the grocery store, I would reach for the Fruity Pebbles, Lucky Charms, whatever. And she would say, no, we're going to get the healthy stuff. Okay, fine. But I would have to, it got to the point where I was asking her if I could have Lucky Charms, right? That's also where I was in my journey where I didn't have a voice and it's not her fault, it was my fault. What was my point to all this?
I guess just enjoying being told what to do.
Yes. So that felt normal. That felt okay. We didn't get into a big fight because she wouldn't let me buy Lucky Charms, right? Now, today, if you and I went to the grocery store, of course you would have opinions about it. Like if I grabbed the Lucky Charms, you would be like, you know, okay, that's not that. You might say something. But if I really wanted them, I'm going to buy them, period. Because I feel like I'm an adult, I could put whatever I want in my body. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so now today, if you were like, no, you're not buying the Lucky Charms, that wouldn't make me feel safe. That would do the complete opposite. That would repel me. And before my 20s, that would be okay. That would be normal.
Right.
So in a way, it is a sign of growth, but there is still that sensitivity. There is still... what I used to grab, it's like that whole concept that when you, whatever you used to be attracted to or gravitate toward now repels you because you have grown.
Yeah. But I do think that there's still, well, yes, yes. And obviously you're still attracted to it or you wouldn't be with me.
That's not true. There's a lot of other reasons why I'm with you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well,
I know, but I mean, I would say like one of my biggest characteristics is that I'm somebody who like, you know, on the outside, at least like has all their shit together, is like the kind of mom of the group. Like I'm the bona fide codependent. So, that is such a huge part of my personality. And like, of course I've done a lot of work around it, right? Like it doesn't run the show anymore, but if you weren't like, if you weren't attracted to that in some level still, we would not be together.
Well, I don't know, because the amount of momness that you have is turned down very low. I mean, it's still there, of course, but it's not, you know, if in your 20s or I don't know, late 20s, it was at a 9, it's probably not at now at a 3 or 4.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, right. And so if that was at a 9 now, I wouldn't be attracted to you. Or even if I was attracted to you, I don't think I would choose to invest in a relationship because we would fight all the time. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
We just had an incident. We had an incident today, and I'm just mentioning it. It didn't turn into a fight, but it was a slight something about in this very topic. Didn't you say something? And I was like, I got a little bit annoyed, and I said, it wasn't what you said. It was because you're making me feel like, by the way, if you guys hear that beeping noise, it's Amazon.
We have a dead end street. So the poor bastards that deliver stuff at like 9 o'clock at night have to back big ass vans down our street.
God. But this noise that you're hearing around the world, because this is now just a common noise, the Amazon truck coming to your house. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
It's in our driveway.
Yeah. You said something today and I said, it's not what you said. It's me feeling like you're my mom. Mm-hmm. Do you remember something? Something happened today. It was
the bottles.
What happened with the bottles?
The baby's bottles.
Oh yeah. Okay. So the baby gets 6 ounces and I think I filled it up to 5.5, which wasn't a big deal. She didn't make a big deal out of it, but then she just mentioned it. And then I said something and then she said, it's a big deal. And then I felt like she was now scolding me, like my mom scolding me. And so then I was a little reactive. And so wasn't it about the bottles?
Here's what's interesting to me. I'm going to say something I don't think I've ever actually said to you before. There is an interesting dynamic to this conversation that I feel like you and I have had multiple times where we'll circle around the feeling that you get around me momming you and how it makes you feel. And usually it's me sitting with it and saying like, okay, yeah, like I see how I do that. And I try my best not to do it anymore. And I don't know that I ever actually, like, I feel like I'm always the one that takes the, like, don't do that. Don't make me feel that way. Don't play the mom. And I don't know that I actually ever in turn or in return get the opportunity to say yes. And like, because I feel like in the moment, because you're the one that usually calls things out that bother you, which is something I struggle with. You know, I don't like to argue a point because that's not an apology, right? Like if you say, I'm sorry, but everything you say after, but, you know, nullifies your apology. So I usually don't have the opportunity to say, it comes from this feeling of, and I'm not saying this is what you're doing, but it comes from this feeling of, I'm the only one that's concerned about things. I'm the only one that wants to make sure that we're safe, right? Because it's about control and safety, whether that's an illusion or not. That's kind of what it stems from.
Yeah, you said something really important. I'm the only one, which right. The feeling that you're having is, because it's not about the half ounce of milk. What the feeling that you're having is, oh, I'm in this by myself.
Well, because I'm doing this alone. When you say something back, like it's not a big deal.
Right.
To me, that triggers in me the response,
right,
or the feeling of, see, I'm the only one that takes life seriously. I'm the only one that's looking out for us and making sure we're safe and protected.
Right. And that's tied to also one of your false beliefs that, you know, about men, and that, you know, like this idea, like, oh, so, I mean, okay. So the half, well, first of all, I had a joke. It's way too late to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. I don't want you to mommy me. I want you to daddy me. Okay. Never mind. So
yeah, no, so what, not the right moment.
Okay. Yeah. No, it's not about the half ounce of milk. It's about the feelings that are triggered because of that. So for me, you were again, momming me, right? Mm-hmm. For you. Okay. Now I feel like I'm in this alone again. I feel like, you know, I'm doing this by myself. Like, I don't feel safe. I don't, you know, and also today it's a half ounce of milk. Tomorrow you might do something that puts our daughter into a dangerous situation, mm-hmm. or, you know, like seatbelts and bigger things that do really are a big deal. So I think for you, when you said it is a big deal, I don't think it's the half ounce that really is a big deal, because it can't be. It's like saying for lunch, she gets 3.5 avocados, but today I gave her 3 and you're going, you know, I don't think it's that. I think what is a big deal for you is that I have to be more responsible, or I have to be more attentive, or I have to be more, put more care into, you know, whether it's clicking her seatbelt or the milk or whatever it is that she needs. So for you, it was like a puncture into like a bigger balloon.
Right. And I think the revelation or realization that I think I just had is that many times when we have this conversation, because we've had it multiple times, because to your point, it's not about the milk, right? Like it comes up a lot just because it's a dynamic thing that we work through a lot. You express in the moment, you said this thing that was very momming. It made me feel gross. I don't like it. And usually,
I wouldn't say gross.
Whatever. Yeah. Usually on the receiving end of that, I kind of say, whether to you or in my head, okay, fair. I said that, I did that. Don't do that again, to myself. But I never actually get to say, well, in this moment, once again, I felt unsafe, or I felt like it wasn't important to you, or right? Like this wasn't important to you.
No. Of course you get to say that. Now, if you said, it's not about the milk, but what I'm realizing, I said that to you because sometimes you're irresponsible. And
but that would have just been a whole thing.
No,
I would have,
depending on how you said it, I would have understood that more, because then I realized, of course it's not about the milk. Then if you said that, you know, that the half ounce is important, like you holding on to that instead of what's underneath makes it harder for me. If you said to me, yeah, it's not about the milk, but you know, I have this fear that you know, today's the milk, tomorrow you're going to put on your motorcycle, and next day you're going to, you know, throw her in the air too high. And then I could kind of see that. I could be like, oh yeah, I understand that. I could be like that sometimes. But if you don't say that and you just say, it's a half ounce of milk, that's very important, then I think like, oh, she's a perfectionist, or she's, you know, putting this under a black light, she's being anal, like all of the things. And then of course, you know, you're also being a mom, and then you make me feel like a child. So one of my insecurities I have is that I am irresponsible. One of my insecurities I have is that I am a child. One of the insecurities I have is that I need to grow up. And so anyone that reminds me of that, I'm going to come out swinging. Because it's something, right, I struggle with.
I think your coming out swinging was, and this is what I had said to you, what I said to you earlier, your coming out swinging was your immediate response to me in the moment when I said to you, hey, like FYI, however I said it, because when I said it, it wasn't inflammatory. I said, hey, there's only 5.5 ounces in here. Your immediate response super quickly was, it's not a big deal. So to me, that was your coming back swinging. And yes. Now, if I had maybe had a bigger speed bump in that moment, I could have stopped. And instead of going, it is a big deal, which was my immediate response back to you, I could have then been the one to step up and say, okay, but it feels like, you know, the irresponsibility, blah, blah, blah. But I think that both of us actually, the more we talk this out, I do think it's fair for both of us in our own way to take our part of the responsibility in, I did the momming, you came out swinging. I actually think both of us could have addressed this differently.
Sure, sure. If you said, yeah, John, you're right, and just said, and that was it. No, I'm just kidding. If you said, yeah, John, you're right, the half ounce is not a big deal, but what is a big deal and what I'm feeling is, I you know, like I'm scared that you're going to do something that is going to put her, that is going to be a big deal, that's going to put her in danger, then I would understood. I'd be like, yeah. Then I see that's where the emotion is coming from, not from the milk.
I think that's unfair. I think that's an unfair expectation. And let me tell you why.
Why?
My initial comment was not inflammatory.
Wait, quit hitting the microphone. People are listening to this.
My initial comment was not inflammatory. My initial comment was, hey, there's only 5.5 ounces in here.
Okay, stop real quick. Okay, yes, but when you say, hey, there's only 5 ounces in here, that's already accusatory instead of, don't you think?
No, I don't. Because
I mean, it depends on the tone.
Right. And my tone was not inflammatory. My tone was actually very like, hey, there's only 5.5 ounces in here. It actually wasn't accusatory. It wasn't, I did not take it as momming. It was more of just like, I realized it.
And then what did I say after that?
Your immediate response was, it's not a big deal.
Wait, didn't I say that the 1/2 ounce foams up?
Yes, but it was part after? Of, it's not a big deal. It foams when you shake it, blah, blah, blah. There was like an explanation to it, but the it's not a big deal was the immediate response to that.
And so I shouldn't have said that. I get that. That came from me feeling like you're scolding me. So instead of feeling like your partner who's raising a daughter together, I felt like, I'm your son and I did something wrong. You know, I put too much sugar in the cookies or whatever I did, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's why my reaction was, it's not a big deal. So it's not a big deal was me puffing my chest up.
Right,
saying,
that was
like,
you coming out swinging, like you said.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's like me like saying like, it was like me saying I'm a man. And I'm not saying that's a good definition of a man, but it's like me like going from kid, you know, saying like, proving to myself like, no, I'm a man. It's not a big deal. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. No, and I understand all of that. And I guess what I'm getting to is I feel like the unfair expectation is that you can come back swinging and I should be the one to say, no, you're right. The 1/2 ounce isn't a big deal, but what it feels like is X.
Well, if you do, if you did that, you would get the credit for dropping the rope. I would not get the credit in that case because I came out swinging. You were the bigger person by saying, hey, this is where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. Now, it doesn't matter who does it, but someone needs to do it or both of us need to do it or else we're just pulling on this rope and then it's tug of war. Mm-hmm. I also actually appreciate that there are times that you see me and I know deep inside you're like right on the fence of like, that's a little dangerous. And I noticed that you don't say anything and you probably do that because you don't want me to feel like a child, you know? So like I dance Logan very different than you dance Logan. Mm-hmm. Right? I use her as a barbell or a kettlebell and I'm more rough with her or I like throw her in the air or, you know, we go to the supermarket and I, you know, give her a kiwi that's, you know, fell off the floor, whatever it is. And I noticed that you won't react. You won't scold me. If it really bothers you, you'll say something. But I could feel that you're trying to let me have my relationship with her and that I appreciate.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's probably, I mean, first off, I appreciate that you noticed that.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I think that goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, if I was level 9, then I'm probably a level 3.
Right. It's all about the level 3. Because if I was a level 9 and you were a level 9, our magnets were flipped. We've come too far to tolerate that. Right. So I think even though at a level 3, I think being aware of our level 3s, because you're right, you know, people snap back, people have tendencies and you may have quit the heroin, but you still have the addictive behavior, whether it's white lies or, you know, maneuvering extremes or whatever the behavior was. So I think just being aware of those things and what's really hard, and I'll be honest, is taking ownership is because I'm an Aries, I'm fiery. I have a lot of pride. It's hard for me to say, oh, I see that. That's my fault. That's my something I need to look at. It's hard for me to let go of the rope unless you're going to let go too, which is childish, but I noticed that. It's stubborn. Aries are very stubborn.
Well, and I mean, I think that that's a very normal human trait for a lot of people, not everybody, but I think that a lot of us, right? I mean, defenses come from somewhere. They come from a desire to, you know, not be attacked, a desire. I mean, it's safety. It's emotional safety. So,
Well, the other layer to this, and it might be a different episode, is of masculine and feminine energy, you know? And I think that, both Vanessa and I have more masculine energy. Don't you think?
I actually don't agree with that. I actually think in a lot of ways you embody more of the feminine, because the feminine would be more playful. The feminine would be more about, you know, softening, showing emotion, you know, being versus doing. And I actually think, and I'm not saying this is a good thing, but I actually think that I tend to, and I always have, embody more of the masculine. And so I think that there actually is a compliment there. I think when it starts to become, I don't know if an issue is the right word, but when it starts to become an issue is when I can't step out of my masculine and allow you to step into yours.
Yes. Yes, because then we have two masculines.
Well, there's just too much masculine, period.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have more problems with that than too much feminine energy in the room. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right. And this is a whole other conversation. You're right. But I mean, the reality is too, I was already wired that way. And then, you know, the first few years, this is what I've been told too by a lot of other mothers, the first few years of being a parent, being a mother, it is almost all masculine.
Sure.
So yeah. It's very hard on relationships. That's why they say, you know, if you're talking about it just from like a, like I'm talking about it from like a depth psychological perspective, this is why the first few years of having a kid are so hard on relationships.
Well, it's survival. And then I think with mothers, you're in protection mode. Naturally,
it's planning, instinctual, protection,
which is all masculine,
right? Doing, you know?
But organizing. I think with the baby, there's a lot of feminine energy, but not with others.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of the contrast, can you say that quote?
Mm. Hang on, let me find it.
Because that's ultimately, and this is kind of how we want to drive this home, is we want to end it on a good note and talk about one of my love lessons since I've met Vanessa is, because we are very different, is finding beauty in the contrast.
So if you don't follow her, Dr. Alexandra Solomon, so she said, and it's actually not even just the quote, it really is the kind of breakdown that she gives in this post that hit me. One of love's central paradoxes, the very same quality in your partner that is a source of attraction during the easy moments is likely to be a source of distress during the difficult moments. And then here, I'll just read a little bit. I don't know if this bores anybody, but to me, it was interesting. I thought she wrote it very beautifully. So she said, the scientist is drawn to the artist because the artist reminds the scientist that the irrational is sacred. The introvert is drawn to the extrovert because the extrovert moves the introvert out of their comfort zone. The feeler is drawn to the thinker because the thinker shows the feeler that sometimes the shortest distance between two points is, in fact, a straight line. But during moments of frustration and stress, the scientist wishes the artist could just make a plan and stick to it. The introvert wishes the extrovert could just feel content at home. And the feeler wishes the thinker could just let down and cry sometimes. And then she goes into more, which I won't read, but.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a character arc there. Right. And for me, one of the, and I feel like we have our own character arc, right? Like if our relationship was a protagonist in a movie, it's gone through its own hero's journey. Right. And we've been together for 3 years. And for me, this was one of the hardest things is that we are different, you know, the contrast. And I've learned over the years to lean into it and not only lean into it, but start to see beauty in our differences. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you know that there has been growth or there has been, you've gone somewhere, the relationship has gone somewhere and come back. Like there has been movement. There has been some kind of call to action, a hero's journey, a character arc.
Yeah. I think it's this whole dynamic of unconsciously you being attracted to somebody who mothers and me being attracted to somebody who needs a mother, right?
And at a level 3, not at a level 9,
but right. I mean, I think that that's this what we're talking about, that's this paradox. And it's like there is the creative, joyful, childlike essence in you that I am drawn to because it reminds me that that is part of life, right? It reminds me to play, which I struggle with. Like I've always had a hard time playing because it just isn't something that was safe, right? Like it's not part of my, let's be safe, let's be in control. So I need to remind myself during the moments of frustration that I am drawn to that in you because it's important for me to remember to play.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's watching how you maneuver, you know, how you cross your T's and dot your I's and reminding myself that I need to keep receipts or I need to, you know, check my bank account once in a while or be responsible, you know, double lock the seatbelt when Logan's in it or drive slower or make sure that there's, you know, 6 ounces instead of 5.5. So I think that we are, so here's the other thing that's great about the contrast is you can be medicine for each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I think treatment would be for you is, so if you want a suggestion on how to be less mommy-like, you could, in the bedroom, you could start calling me daddy. I think that would be a good intervention for you to exercise that.
If you could see me right now, you would see me rolling my eyes really, really hard.
Guys, thank you for listening. And
I will not be calling him daddy later.
If you want to subscribe, if you like these episodes, this actually, my podcast is only 10 minutes. So this is interesting for me to go longer because we go about 40 minutes, 35 minutes. And if you want to put a little review, and if any of this dialogue was helpful, what that does is that pushes this out more and it'll help other people who are, you know, struggling like everyone else in their relationships.
Yeah. I think if you want that shot glass, then John's podcast is an extra listen. And if you want the lengthy, heady, spiritual, let's get in over our heads, then that's my podcast.
Yes. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Be well.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.